Food psychologists have a field day with the way advertisers promote their products and the subsequent response from consumers, as illustrated in the popular book Mindless Eating by Dr. Brian Wansink of Cornell University. Weight loss requires a net reduction in calories, a negative balance. Food producers have tapped into this market by providing foods euphemistically labeled as, quote, healthy snacks, unquote. A study, Perceived Healthiness of Food, If It's Healthy, You Can Eat More, published in the April 2009 edition of the journal Appetite, conducted at the University of Toronto, Mississauga, wanted to assess the effect this marketing has on the consumer's perception of the quality of the food, the quantity consumed, and whether other factors influence these perceptions. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Janet Pahlavi, Professor, Department of Psychology at the University of Toronto. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to start and ask you, and I looked at your biography, and you have a lot of studies that you've done in the past. I wanted to ask, what were some of the previous studies that you've done and that you've read that led to this particular one?
Oh, interesting question. Well, I have been studying the effects of various factors on eating behavior over the years. Some of the factors that I study are factors of the individual, like whether the individual is a chronic dieter or not. Mm-hmm. And some of the factors that I have studied are more about the environment or the food. So I have looked at various factors that include aspects of the food and food cues to see what effects it has on people's eating behavior, how much they eat mainly. And one of the things that we noticed, just like you and Brian, is that a lot of foods are now being labeled as healthy. That seems to be the new buzzword, and people are very interested in healthy. And the fact that something is labeled as healthy is pretty ambiguous, and it's not clear what that means. But I think it carries an implicit message to people that they can eat more of it. And so we were interested to see if that was the case, that, you know, if it's healthy, does that mean that now you don't have to worry about it, that this, you know, it's good for you. So if it's good for you,
you
a little
well
is good
it,
for right? you, a more is even better for you, isn't it? So we wanted to test that out, and that's why we did the first study. We actually have just completed a second study in that series, looking at males to see if they're the same as females.
So what was the overall study design, and what were the endpoints that you were measuring?
The endpoint that we were measuring is our favorite endpoint, and that is how much people ate. And so the design was that we had female subjects come into our laboratory, and half of them were told that they were all told we were market researchers and that we wanted to test out new products, and we had this new product for them to test. So then the manipulation comes in. Half of them are told the new product is a gourmet oatmeal raisin cookie.
Okay,
which it sort of is.
Right.
The other half were told something that is also sort of true, which is that this is a high-fiber, oat-based snack with raisins and fruit, and that, you know, has all kinds of healthy ingredients. So this is a healthy snack.
Okay.
So one group is told gourmet cookie. One group is told healthy snack. They're all given the same oatmeal raisin cookies that we bake ourselves in the lab. And the result was that the students who were told that this was a healthy snack ate 35% more than the students who were told these were gourmet chocolate, gourmet oatmeal raisin cookies.
Well, this is very interesting because
we loved it.
it's funny, and it's really telling, because I remember when I was speaking to Brian, and he said, you know, when we wanted to get kids to drink, to see if they could drink more vegetable juice, they named it a rainbow smoothie. And he said it was amazing. They had, you know, vegetable juice, rainbow smoothie, and they bought the rainbow smoothie and drank it. And this is very similar to what you're saying in terms of how you presented or how you described the cookie and how it influenced eating behavior.
Exactly. And so this has sort of sparked for us a whole line of research We're going to be looking at more aspects of this kind of situation because we want to understand why.
Mm-hmm.
Why did people feel that because it's healthy, they can eat more? So we want to look at various things that struck us about this, such as, do they assume it has fewer calories?
Right.
Is it simply calories? Does healthy simply mean less calories? So we haven't got the data in yet, but we did ask our male subjects how many calories they thought were in the two snacks.
Right.
We're also wondering if they have different expectations about the taste of the food. Peter Herman came up with the idea that maybe healthy sounds like it shouldn't taste as good, and then when it does, they're so pleasantly surprised.
They go, oh, this is nirvana.
Yeah. Oh, this is good for me, and it tastes so good. Wow. And so that maybe it's, you know, it's this expectation that it's going to taste bad, and whoa, it tastes good. Maybe that's what does it.
Now, do you think that the people that market these foods and they put these labels on, do you think that they already have the answer and that's why they're doing it? They're just and that they understand the psychology also behind this type of marketing?
Interesting question. I definitely know that some marketers do market tests.
Yes.
I have a friend who runs a market research firm. I happen to know that they will do things like see, you know, well, how does the public respond to the word healthy?
Right.
They like it. Okay, slap it on everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I do believe that could be part of what's going on, that the firms could have tested this in advance. Or it may just simply be that, you know, they see the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, they're living in the same society we're living in. And they can see what's going on, that everybody is concerned now about the healthiness of things, and so let's just say this is healthy.
But
there was the Snackwells phenomenon of several
years
ago.
Yes, yes. Well, there's still that perception, or at least what are people defining, and you've said, what are people defining as healthy? What does it mean to them? And is it, and as you mentioned, is it calories? Is it the fact that they think this has a lot of nutrients in it, that if it's just going to provide them with a what their body needs? Is it similar in some ways when you see the marketing of things that normally you wouldn't overeat on, or at least I hope you wouldn't, when you see the new 100 calorie mini cute sodas or the 100 calorie chocolates, you know, and you go, wow, it's only 100 calories, I can eat it. But then I would imagine you'd have to ask yourself how many of these two people consume, because
well,
it comes out
that
as smaller.
That is the question. And there is some evidence that when it's advertised as the 100-calorie mini whatever, that people will eat two packs.
Mm-hmm.
Or
that's
three,
right, yeah.
Because it's only 100 calories. So, yeah, it's just a way to give people an excuse to do what it is they want to do.
Now, you've done a lot of research as well on chronic dieters. And
mm-hmm.
what's the implication for people who are chronic dieters when they're faced with this type of advertising or this type of promotion?
Well, the chronic dieter is much more susceptible to this kind of thing because the chronic dieter has given up regulating her intake internally.
Mm-hmm.
She's no longer relying on the signals from her stomach to tell her, oh, you're hungry, eat something, or you're full, stop eating, because she doesn't trust those. She thinks that's what made her fat, so she can't listen to that. So instead, she is listening to external cues.
Right.
And external cues include things like those packages that say, yes, you can eat this because this is healthy. You're on a diet, so this is what you should eat. And the dieter, of course, is wanting very much to eat, and she wants to eat as much as possible
mm-hmm.
without breaking her diet. So if you tell her, well, it's okay, this is good for you, she's the one who is going to be more likely to run out and buy that product and overeat it because now it's okay.
So they in effect, really don't have much control over what they're doing if they're not trusting their own sense of what to do and depending on external cues to move them along.
Yes.
Which I guess...
So they're more susceptible to external cues. Mm-hmm.
Now, are there, from your research and in sort of the next steps as well, are there going to be questions asked about what people are doing to confront this type of labeling, or how, you know, is there going to be a study that sort of educates people ahead of time and then puts them into rooms where they have this type of promotion or at least this type of labeling to see if they do use the information to either make better choices or at least curtail the enthusiasm of going, oh, wow, this is healthy, I can eat as much as I want. Is there anything like that that's being planned?
Well, there's actually a study being done. In fact, we're almost finished collecting data on the first study in this series. As you've probably heard, there's a movement afoot here in Toronto to require, the way New York does, that
right.
restaurants label the number of calories in their offerings.
Yes.
Which is going to be very expensive for the restaurants, but the idea is to fight the obesity epidemic.
Correct.
But there is no actual evidence that, you know, if you talk about evidence-based
mm-hmm.
medicine,
right.
there is no research evidence that shows that labeling the calories is going to change people's ordering and eating behavior.
Right.
So we are just finishing the first study in a series of studies where we're going to be looking at that. We set up our own little restaurant. Remember I said I wasn't sure
yes.
if the healthy food was seen as calorically different.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we set up a little restaurant in my lab with tablecloths and a menu. And the menu sometimes just has the two food options, which are pasta and salad.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the menu has caloric labels on the pasta and the salad. And sometimes the pasta is labeled as being 600 calories and the salad is 1,200 calories.
Right.
And sometimes it's the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they're both 1,200 calories.
They
are equicaloric.
You're evil, evil.
But we want to see what people order and what they eat. And I only have preliminary data from this
okay.
because the study is still being run
right.
as we speak.
Okay. Well,
but what I have so far
yes.
Is something that appeals to me a lot, because my research on dieters and non-dieters has mainly shown that although dieters want to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
they also really want to eat, and they'll take almost any excuse. Anything we do to the dieter in the lab breaks her diet. And a dieter whose diet is broken, it turns out, eats a lot.
Right.
She eats way more than a non-dieter because, you know, she's splurging now because she's planning on going back on her diet
right.
at the first opportunity. Well, what we're finding in this restaurant study is that the dieters, there doesn't seem to be much difference in ordering behavior.
Okay.
They are ordering what they like. But the dieters who order the 1,200-calorie pasta eat the most.
Hmm.
Because they've essentially
given
decided
up.
If they've ordered the 1,200-calorie pasta, then that's essentially saying, oh, well,
there,
my diet's broken for now. We call this the what-the-hell effect.
Wow.
Oh, what the hell, I'll diet tomorrow.
I'm
in this situation now, I can't help it, it's not my fault.
Hmm.
But the interesting thing with regard to the question you asked
yeah.
is that the salad that is labeled 1,200 calories is not eaten to excess.
Huh.
They don't eat any more of the salad when it's 1,200 calories, only the pasta.
Pasta.
So 1,200 calories of salad, that's fine. That's good for you. That's okay. It's only 1,200 calories of pasta.
Which is not enough.
That has broken your diet, and you might as well just eat it all, because what the heck.
So when are you planning to publish this new data, and also the data with the men that you used to look at the healthy snack issue?
Okay, well, the data on men will be analyzed by next week
mm-hmm.
because it's being presented at our lab meeting next Tuesday. So we will look through it then, and it will get written up shortly thereafter, because the person in charge of that study is my very, very productive postdoc, Véronique Provencher, who's actually moving to Laval University.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I hate to lose her.
Yeah.
But she's the one who was the first author of the first study, and she's going to be first author of this. And I'm sure, knowing Véronique, it'll be written up by next month. The restaurant study, as I say, we're not finished running subjects, right. And I will be assessing that this week with the graduate student who's in charge of that study, Laura Gers, and we will see how much longer it's going to take to run it, but I'm hoping that we'll have that study submitted sometime before the end of the summer.
Well, I think it would be great to have you back on to follow up on this, because it is, given that the laws may be changed and restaurants may be
posting it. I know, on the basis of no data whatsoever.
Right. So it might be very interesting to have you come back on and review the data.
Well, I would be very happy to. We certainly have fun doing this research, so I'm happy to share it with your listeners.
Dr. Janet Pallavi is professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of Toronto. And Dr. Pallavi, I'd like to thank you again for having... I've had a great time talking about this. And, I, you know, from this whole discussion and seeing that you know Brian Wansing personally, I can see... I mean, you probably get along. I'd love to be a fly in the room listening to you talk both to each other, because this is... It's absolutely fantastic.
We have a good time. and we're really interested in what we do.
No,
that's the best possible...
I can tell.
The best possible career is to be doing what you love.
It was lots of enthusiasm. It's terrific.
Well, thank you.
All the best.
You too.